much axes. Now, if you look at the special case of conformal field theory, like chiral conformal field theory, your conformal field theory lives in two-dimensional Minkowski space, let's say. You can factify this, you'll need to include a point at infinity, you know, things like the conformal transformations like 1 over z. So you can factify your conformal factorization, and that's a direct product of two copies of F1, of the two light points. And so your chiral theory will be your algebraic quantum field theory restricted to one of your circles. And so you satisfy all the natural properties. So for every interval, for example, in your circle, you associate every open union, every union of intervals, you associate some factor, and these factors are nested in the appropriate way. And you have where the Virasoro algebra comes in, of course, is through the circle. So you have an action of diff S1 on circle, an action this has to respect your act of your algebras in the appropriate way. So you get all the different axes. I don't have time to get into it. It's a natural definition. And so from the notion, from the, if you apply this to CFT, then you get net factors. And so the theory of nets of factors, at least for the application, specific application to the conformal field theory, is younger than vertex operator algebras. The real theory has been pursued aggressively in much more recent times. So a few ways of that head start. But we have this relationship, which I'll call a conjecture, but surely it's not a conjecture. It's a theorem in waiting, something that will be a theorem in 5 years or 7 years or something like that. In fact, the first step toward establishing this conjecture is a recent preprint by Carpi and a bunch of other people. But there's still a lot of work to be done. But this is the conjecture. The conjecture is that both these nets of factors, so S1 factors that have this diff S1 action, et cetera, you impose the obvious CFT-like requirements on it. Nets of factors, I'll just call them nets of factors. So formal nets of factors, I guess, is probably a better word for it. Nets of factors, probably have to use the word local as well, but you add in all of the adjectives. Actually, every sentence I utter will be missing adjectives, and it's your challenge to fill in the appropriate change, modify some of the adjectives I did use. Anyways, the formal nets of factors should be in a very natural correspondence. It should be a functorial correspondence. It should be a beautiful relationship between this and VOAs. And so if you restrict to rational VOAs, for example, then you'll restrict to the analog of rational informal nets of factors, et cetera, et cetera. So this will be a beautiful relationship between these two areas. The reason we expect this conjecture to hold, of course, is that these two things describe the same beast, a conformal field theory. And a conformal field theory is a quantum field theory that's extraordinarily nice, extraordinarily well behaved. So these are the QFTs that you can actually prove theorems about. And so you would expect this to be a theorem, and it will be a theorem sometime in the nearest future.
So can I argue with one of the objectives?
What do you want to do? I don't want to talk about that. So the conformal part, though, has to do with the diff S1 part. So diff S1 is a Lie group of a Lie algebra whose classification, central extension, is the Virasoro algebra.
Yes.
So this is the relation of this conformal. So I can give you references for this and everything else I'm talking about right now. What I'm more interested in is telling sort of this overarching story, and you can decide if it's of interest to you or not. Right, so why is this of interest to us? Why can't these conformal nets of factors, people live in their little world, we live in our little world, and whenever we prove a theorem, we turn some crank and get a theorem into conformal nets and vice versa? Well, the reason is that that isn't at all the way that works. This is a glorious kind of a duality, if you want to call it that, between two different approaches to the same thing. So there's things that you can do in the VOA world that are relatively easy, and they are extremely hard to figure out. They're very unnatural, it seems, in the nets of factors world, and it goes the other way around as well. So let's give you some examples of why VOAs are better than factors, than the nets. So one way is nets of factors, once you take it literally, you have to have unitary theories. You're required to have unitary. So that means logarithmic theories are out of the question. So this is unnatural. This is measure zero of the CFTs will be unitary CFTs. So you don't know if you're throwing away some interesting examples by restricting yourself to unitary. But this is really a legitimate approach to CFT. Then you have to figure out a way to make sense of unitary. This is one of the weaknesses, is that unitarity, it turns out that if you try hard, you can start to fit it in. So it hasn't been fit into the nets of factors picture yet, but we'll see. But maybe we'll see a little bit later how this is. So there's been some work at weakening the requirement of unitarity. Another thing that's maybe more important for us at this workshop is modular functions. So how can you have moonshine without modular functions, modular forms? And so you could define these characters, of course, because this net of factors is meant to be an equivalent picture of a CFT. So of course you could define what these characters are, what they're going to be. They'll be trace of some operator. But they're not an obvious, they're not the first thing that you do, whereas in the BOA picture.
Wait, what are you doing? You're doing a character of a representation of a von Neumann algebra, or?
No, so what I mean here, so modular functions are going to be the characters of, I'm going to assume for the most part that our BOAs, our CFTs, are sometimes are rational. So that's what I'm going to assume from the start. So then, as you know, the characters of your rational.
No, I know the BOA side, but I mean, we have some nice von Neumann algebras of operators in parts of space-time.
Yes, so you'll have to define what you mean by a module for this net of factors.
And
so
you could talk about modules for those.
They'll come with a grading on it. Yep. You'll have L-naught from your...
So you're talking about characters of modules of...
Characters of modules of your von Neumann, of your nets of factors.
Okay.
So not modules of your von Neumann algebra, but they're modules. You define what module means in the context of the net of factors. So you could do this, but it's not as compelling as it is in the BOA world. And more importantly, maybe the reason for that is these characters in the CFT world have a real meaning. What they are chiral blocks on a torus, a one-punctured torus. And so these are part of the building blocks of the whole theory. You cannot have CFT without these characters being there. These play a role in the whole theory. And the nets of factors right now do not have a higher genus picture. They don't know how to do higher genus. So in the chiral story. So higher genus is a real problem. Okay.
I mean, is Lorentzian signature important in that? I had the impression it is in the algebraic quantum field theory program.
Right, so they're starting to, that's going to be one of the reasons.
So if you put a Lorentzian signature metric on a higher genus surface, you can have singularities.
Yeah, so you'd have right. So they're what their starting point is for the next factors is the Minkowski plane acted by two circles,
mm-hmm.
and that's their starting point. Chiral means S1, and so how do you do this for genus 67? So
we can't redo on genus
with BOAs. Well, in principle, you can. So at least you can do genus 1. I mean, that's what Bohm's
genus 1, but that's not fine.
Right. So, well, I mean, you can at least formally define what these things should be. They'll be built up out of intertwiners, the appropriate choices of these intertwiner operators. You can formally define it. It's a very complicated beast, but you know what it means. You know what it means formally. And in the genus 1 case, you know what it means. So you have theories that describe this. This is in Zhu, this is in Huang. You need to understand these blocks on the torus. So, right. So anyways, you can come up with a few other things, but I don't want to waste my time just saying why BOAs are better than nets. But you can also spend as much time, maybe more time, on why nets are better than BOAs. And I don't want to spend my time on this either. My view is that these are two different sides, and if it's looking right now like the score is 4-1 for nets, say, over BOAs, we'll just wait a little bit longer, and you're just asking the wrong questions, and it'll quickly become 5-4 for BOAs. These are two different pictures, and you want this in mathematics, you want this in science. You want two different pictures that are equivalent to each other but at a deep level. Right, so why are nets better than BOAs? Well, as I said, theory of nets is a younger theory than the theory of BOAs, but they already have some structural results that are not deep from the point of view of nets. So Feng Zhu proved that orbifolds, finite group orbifolds of rational nets, are rational. So this doesn't just apply to cyclic orbifolds, for example, it applies to orbifold by the monster. Also, the same for cosets. So you get rationality. These are some of the big dreams of BOA theory right now. There's another thing which is maybe more embarrassing. So we heard yesterday afternoon a talk on the physicist lists of C24 theories, the specialities, and there's been a great effort in DOA theory to make this rigorous, make this list, to prove that this list is the answer for C24, and there's been enormous progress on this, and all that is wonderful. But there's even a more simpler example of this kind of phenomenon happening that's more fundamental, I think. If you look at the C less than one theories, so you choose a unitary, let's keep it unitary, C less than one theories, then one of the basic results in any book, any review article on the formal field theory, you get the Pelliot-Sixon-Zubia classification in around 1987 or something like that, which classifies all of the CFTs that are of charge less than one. And these are parameterized by pairs of Dinkin diagrams. So there's an ADE classification. There's pairs of ADE classifications. You choose, for a unitary theory, you choose your two Dinkin diagrams to have Coxeter numbers that differ by one. So for example, you have E8 and E29 would be one of the possible pairs. And so you have pairs of all this, there's an analog for the non-unitary. So there's an analog, what I'm going to say, for the non-unitary as well. But let's just keep ourselves on unitary. Right. So this is the story here. So the guess would be that the classification of C less than one VOAs, unitary VOAs, is going to be given by the ADE diagrams. You have to, so these are the list of all partition functions, and so you have to make the ones that are actually a sum of squares correspond to extension type. That you do that, and you get your list, and that has to be the answer. What's embarrassing, this is embarrassing not just for VOA people, but it's embarrassing for physicists, is there's been no construction of these CFTs, of these VOAs. I mean, for some of them, for most of them, there has been. So the kinds of constructions that you get for this is where GKO COSET construction was originated, I think, looking at this problem. So you have your central charge, it looks, I'm probably going to get this wrong, but it's something like 6mm plus 1, m runs from 2 or something to infinity, and these are the central charges of your theories. And if you look at the minimum, your sort of minimal model itself,
6 over m infinity.
Okay, that's right. Okay, let's go with this. And you look at your sort of minimal models of the, they're going to correspond to cosets of SU of A1 at level. I think it's m minus 1 contained in so the Virchow algebra for this thing, contained in the Virchow algebra for this thing. I have all these numbers right. So look at the coset of these VOAs, and you recover the minimal models. So this corresponds to the case where you have something like am, a pair of your Dinkin diagrams is am. M minus 1 or something, I don't know what exactly the subscripts are, but something like this. It's some kind of embedding like this. And then you have simple current extensions, that would be the ones that involve the D's. Then you have the ones that involve the E's. So for extension type, there's E6 and E8. So you have, for example, if I should make sure I get this all right. So for example, E8, let's just do the E8 for more interesting. It'll correspond, this is the difference of 1 between these two Dinkin diagrams. So this one will correspond to another coset. The coset here would be, if I've done this right, this will be A1 third out 28. And there's a conformal embedding of A1 28 inside G2 1. So I can, over here, I get a G2 1 and an A1 1. And the coset of this thing, in this thing, is the E8 A3. So all is good. It works out beautifully. But what about putting E8 on this side? That'll be A28. In this way, there's a problem. So there's no, classically, there's no CFT construction of this minimum one. If I'm wrong, then I'm very happy to hear this, actually. But as far as I know, there's no
wrong
construction of this.
So, I mean, so
there is now, actually. As of 3 months ago or something.
So this construction of Fuchs and Schweiger, that these people, you wouldn't call that a CFT construction?
Well, did they construct this?
They would probably claim that they can. They would pick some boundary conditions.
So
and
what's
some
the modular tensor category that corresponds to this? You normally start with a VOA or something in their language. There's no VOA that corresponds to this extension. I mean, now
I mean, they would start with some boundary condition and would look at the boundary.
Okay, we need a modular tensor category, though, right? At some stage, we need a modular tensor category.
I think so.
So where's that going to come from?
But
so where that comes
isn't
from
that
is
just
the
a
VOA.
Model, so.
Well, I mean, where it comes from is this isn't the minimal model one. That would be the wrong. It's an extension of that corresponding minimal model.
But you can get the modular tensor category without constructing the whole VOA. Right?
Yeah, so
you
so
just need
the
braiding and fusing matrices.
Right, so how do you construct those? So, as far as I know, it's not being constructed. Well, now it has been constructed. But it wasn't constructed, as far as I know, it's not being constructed historically.
I thought for cosets, we need to construct. I mean, you
this
have
is
to solve that. You have to solve the
this isn't a coset, that's the problem. So it's not a coset. So if it's a coset world, if you can express this as a coset,
I see. This is not a GKO coset.
I mean, you're saying
actually, there is a coset now. We now finally have a
coset. Okay.
But you're saying it's an extension of some coset, and it's not going to have to put the extension.
Yeah, that's right. So this is going to be, this is an extension of the A1 coset. It's some kind of extension of that. But it's hard to extend a VOA. It's not a natural. Things that you write down to get modular variant partition functions from, like Chalk's list, to actually construct a VOA that realizes that extension is if it's a simple current extension, then it's a different story. But if it's this is not a simple current extension, then you have to do work. And that work was not done. I'm maybe wrong, but it was not done until very recently. And so this finally has been done, but only very recently, 3 months ago or something, by Dong and someone else, Lin. So this is November of 2014. Their method for doing this, in the picture of nets, this has been known from more or less the beginning by Kawagashi and Longo, more or less from the beginning, classified all these nets and proved their existence. And so this was reinterpreted in a more VOA-friendly way by Feng Shu. And him with Dong set up some of the machinery to interpret that construction in a VOA-friendly way, and it was only a few months ago that Dong fleshed it out and established the existence of the VOA for this. So actually, once the nets of factors people constructed these minimal models, these weird ones, the one for E6 was also open. So until they did that, then none of these theories.
So they found a coset, or how did they?
Yeah, they found a coset. So maybe they should. Well, I don't want to waste too much time on this, but if you have so they found a way to, given certain natural conditions, then you can do extensions of your coset. If you have some VOA, if you have some VOA that's contained, if you have some W that's contained in some B, and W is, so there's a coset here, so the coset is going to be what's called WC, I guess. So you have some kind of a coset that's inside, so this is the coset of this in here, and if you extend W, then you can extend the coset. There's the analogous extension of the coset also works. So it'll be a VOA. That's the theorem. The theorem came from nets of factors, and so you can set it all up. You can't prove it using the proof for nets of factors. You can prove it using VOA machinery, but the conjecture, so it's a conjecture originally. We talked about this actually. So this is an example of where the nets picture. This is a very atypical hockey stick example, so don't get any illusions. They're much more formidable objects in real life. So again, I don't want to waste time saying why one is better than the other. The point of this little digression is just to say that this is not a triviality. If you have, there's no dictionary where you have some proof or calculation or example to perform on that. You just carry it over, look at what they did over here, and just find the analog over here, do it over here. There's no relationship like that. It's a much, much more interesting relationship. It's like a duality in string theory, where you have something you can't do over here, and you can do it over here, and eventually we'll have a theorem that says that if you can do it over here, then automatically you know that it exists over here. You don't have a clue how to construct it, but you know that it exists. So that's the picture that we're looking for. So actually, I would say that we are not in a golden time for VOAs right now. Moonshine is helping to bring some sugar to the bloodstream of VOAs, but I would say we're not in a golden time of VOAs right now. But I think we're on the verge of a golden time for VOAs. So I think when this becomes established, the interaction between the factors picture and the VOAs picture becomes established, then I think that we are in a golden time. this is going to be a glorious time. That's the time to get grad students working in BOAs. Okay, so.
So what would happen in the glorious time?
In the glorious time, well, I mean, you'll see, you'll get a hint as to what's going to happen. Ask me a question. If you're not satisfied with my answer,
okay.
then ask me again.
Sorry.
And I'll try to say more. Okay, well, I'm going way slower than I wanted to go. So, okay, so sort of this picture that says that all, we don't have it written down, here we have it written down, that VOAs, the theory of VOAs is going to be equivalent to the theory of events and factors. And so this is a pretty, this is still a pretty complicated situation. So, you know, in the context of moonshine especially, but more generally, the context of life, it's not a bad idea to cast shadows of these complicated beasts and look at something that's a little bit simpler. So in moonshine, we're interested in the representations, the modules of these beasts. So at the level of modules, what you'll get is you'll have a modular potential category here, at least when you have nice enough VOAs. And you'll have modular potential categories over here. And so one of the correspondence, of course, would be that these two modular potential categories are equivalent to each other. So that's one of the things that you'll get. So let's look, at least for a little while, at the world of modular potential categories. I don't want to define what modular potential category is. If you don't know what it is, then that's fine. Drift off. So this conjecture is a safe conjecture. It shouldn't even be called conjecture. It should be called imminent theorem. Hopefully we'll have Gannon's name somewhere in the middle of it. But this conjecture, that's certainly a more dubious conjecture, but I still certainly think this conjecture is true. This conjecture says that every modular potential category comes from or is associated with a VOA. So if this is not true, then that's also interesting. What's the obstruction of this? So this is maybe conjecture is the right word, maybe it should be guiding principle for some people or whatever. I'm not alone in thinking that this is true, probably.
Well, but for quasi-rational VOAs, there should be an extension of modular tensor category.
Yeah, so this is just for rational. So I'm talking about rational VOAs.
So you're taking that there are only finitely many simple objects.
Yeah, exactly. So modular tensor category has finitely many simple objects. That's right. That's part of the primer. So this is what I would expect to be true, but if it's not, then that's just as interesting. Then you want to understand the obstructions of that. But let's just pretend that this is going to be one of my guiding principles in this little talk for now. So I'm going to deflect some of the attention to modular tensor categories. So modular tensor categories is it's still pretty complicated. So for example, the classification of modular tensor categories is done up to something like five of simple objects. So a modular tensor category, for those who don't know, it's just a category, of course. You have the objects are going to be, for example, modules of a VOA. And you have a tensor product structure, it's called a fusion. And you'll have only finally many of these simple objects in the case of a modular tensor category. So those correspond to the rationals. And you have a grading, and you have an S and T matrix, you get a representation of SL2Z. And you also get representations of all the higher mapping class groups. So that's what a modular tensor category is like. So it's a very rich structure, but the classification has been pretty tame. The point of mathematics, physics, or whatever is not classifications, but the point is always, I think, qualitative truth. So you want to get an idea of what's going on. And so the point of classification type statements is not this long list of or less chaos, but rather just some kind of an idea. You have some kind of an idea of what a modular tensor category looks like. If the only examples you have in your head come from finite groups and V8 groups or something, then you're going to get a very misleading picture of the world of modular tensor categories. You're not going to ask very many good questions. You're going to be led to wrong conjectures. So that's the idea of wasting a little bit of time thinking about classification modular tensor categories. People have done this, and they haven't got very far. And all their examples, this is just too small to really start seeing any really interesting examples, if there are any. So these examples, the things that they see on their list are pretty boring modular tensor categories. If you're led to the thought that maybe that's all that there is. And who knows? That's wrong, but you can believe that if you wish. So modular tensor category, I would suggest, is too complicated of an object. You should go a little bit, you should simplify even more. And so what you should simplify to is something called fusion categories. So I'm using the word category a lot, and my I don't like the word category. I don't like this attitude, this philosophy to mathematics, to sort of complicate, to generalize, whatever. That's something you should do with great reluctance. So we heard yesterday what brings Christoph joy. What brings me joy is doing things like modular tensor category. That's too complicated. Let's dumbify it. So for me, the motto, the mantra that I keep whispering to myself is dumbify, simplify, make it really easy. Reduce your question to almost combinatorics. And then to try to crack your combinatorics, you then start adding in things. But you do this with your question in mind, your classification problem in mind, or whatever your question is. That's when you choose how to start adding in stuff. For example, categories or whatever. So I'm not saying it's the right attitude, but this is probably problem solver versus theory builder. It's probably that kind of a dichotomy. But that's the camp that I live in. So there's a story I read about beavers. We're in Canada, we have to talk about beavers. So apparently it turns out that beavers can't. So they make these very intricate dams. They dam up rivers. And how they do this is, it turns out they hate the sound of running water. So if they hear running water, it just drives them nuts. Stop that. They go wake up and they start plugging in mud and sticks to stop the flow of water, trickling water. The way that we know that this is true is someone put a tape recorder on the side of a still lake. This is a true story. They put a tape recorder of running water on the side of a still lake, and the next morning it was coated with mud and sticks. So I would suggest that a lot of the category theory type people are like the beavers. They can't stand the sound of sets and things that actually are things that everyone understands. To reinterpret it in a way that only their students and themselves and their collaborators. So I have much more sympathy for the running water than I do for the beavers. So when I'm using words like categories, I'm not trying to say that I'm in the beaver camp. What I'm trying to say is this is the way to say things that are interesting about things that are things like VOAs, things that we would actually care about. So anyway, fusion categories is the right way to dumbify a modular tensor category.
Can I ask a beaverish irrelevant question?
Yeah.
Is there a similar statement about 3D
topological? Yeah, I don't know, so I can't say the answer to that. Probably it is. I don't know the answer to that, so I can't say that. So I'm definitely running out of time, and I'm not going to get my punchline at all. Right, so fusion categories. So what a fusion category is, I'll just very briefly say what it is. It's the abstractification of the representations of a finite group. So you have finitely many simple objects. These are going to correspond to the irreducible reps of your finite group. You have a tensor product structure, you can tensor these representations of finite groups together. You have the idea of a dual quantum gradient. You have, it's a semi-simple theory, it's a finite group representation theory over the complex numbers. It's semi-simple, and I'm sure I'm forgetting things, but that's it. There's no braiding, for example. That's the big difference between a fusion category and a modular tensor category. There's no braiding. That makes all the difference in the world. It's hard to construct modular tensor categories. At least for me, it's hard to construct a modular tensor category, but it's easy to construct fusion categories. At least for me, it's easy to construct fusion categories. In fact, you don't construct fusion categories. You construct something that turns out to be equivalent to it, and this is subfactors. Subfactors are just one factor, one simple binomial algebra contained inside inside itself, really. These are going to be isomorphic copies of the same monomial algebra. And it turns out that the two theories are the same. More precisely, every fusion category can be realized as endomorphisms. These are algebra endomorphisms, star algebra endomorphisms, monomial homomorphisms. So a family of these endomorphisms on a factor.
That's really a theorem.
That's a theorem, yeah. You can see the profile. And so the right way to think about fusion categories isn't six-change symbols and stuff like that. At least not for me. For me, it's endomorphisms on binomial algebras. I think it's a far more beautiful, elegant theory. And so this is the way to do it. So I don't know much about subfactors. It's certainly an adopted area for me. But I'm one of the world's leaders at constructing these things. And I don't do it with categories. I do it with endomorphisms on that. Right. OK. So who cares? So sub-factors. So there's a way to see the sub-factor coming out of your net of factors. Your net of factors is this continuum of sub-factors. And there's a way to get out a canonical sub-factor from that, but I don't have time to this one. So fusion categories are the thing. Now fusion categories are not going to have gradients in general. They're not going to correspond to representations of a rational few A. But there's a way to create a modular tensor category from a fusion category. There's a generic construction. It's through Drinfeld. So the Drinfeld, or it's not through Drinfeld, but it's the idea is stolen through the double, Drinfeld double. So it goes under lots of names, the center construction, Drinfeld double construction. So you can take a fusion category, whatever those are, and you get a modular tensor category. So I can't explain why this is true, but fusion categories are dumbified enough that you can construct a hell of a lot of these examples. And then you can do the double construction, and at least if you've constructed them as subfactors in the subfactor world, you can compute this modular tensor category. The double construction is effective.
Just the neural algebra. Right, right.
From the modular tensor category to find something that's double.
They don't know right that.
No, they don't. In fact, that's a good question, so let's try to address that question. So we know that the doubles of fusion category are modular tensor categories. You get this embedding of the set of all, this is meant to be a symbolic short exact sequence. So all the doubles of fusions are give you modular tensor categories. And there's a projection. This is called Vick group. The Vick group is, well, you can think about it in terms of the picture of VOA. So a conformal embedding of one VOA inside another, the modular tensor categories are going to be Vick related. So for example, G1 level G2 level 1 is a conformal bigger algebra than A1 level 28. And so their modular tensor categories are going to be Vick related. And then using that, you build up this zigzag. You look at the equivalence relation that's constructed from that. And you get the idea of a Vick group. So the Vick group is a set of all equivalence classes. It has a group structure that are built on this idea of a finite extension, if you want to call it that. And so so this, it turns out there's a conjecture. So this is the conjecture of Davidoff. And I think it's really Davidoff's conjecture. But it's a conjecture of a few other people are on their name on the paper. And it says that in every Vick class, you get an affine algebra. There's a representative in your Vick class of an affine algebra.
What's the coset?
You get, so cosets are going to be, that'll be the difference. So something coseted with something else will be very equivalent to the something minus something else. And the cosets are active in your orbital folds. Don't change your bit class, of course. So this is a picture. This is the conjectural part here. And so what this is telling us, though, is that if you want to search for weird modular tensor categories, then what you should look for is the doubles of fusion categories. So the search for exotic modular tensor categories, and ultimately the search for exotic VOAs, a place to look would be the doubles of fusion categories. How much time do I have left? John?
At least 10 minutes.
Okay, that's good.
Is it possible to give an example of such an exotic?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
So right now it's not at all obvious that there's any such thing, right? Surely it's clear that there's no such thing.
The first thing you do is give us an example.
Yeah. First thing I did is I gave an example. Let's pretend we didn't see that example. Surely there's nothing inside. After all, everything comes from affine algebras and finite groups. That's a conjecture that everything comes from. So where are we now? Okay, so the search for weird modular tensor categories, what we're going to look for are weird fusion categories. Now, fusion categories, as I say, are the same thing as subfactors, so we look for weird subfactors. Now, it's not the golden time for VOAs, I would suggest. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm wrong. It would be a difference because in another year or two it will be, but for now it's not, probably. But it is the golden time, probably, for subfactors. So subfactor people would say that this is a wonderful time for subfactors. This is the golden time for subfactors. And so one of the reasons it's the golden time for subfactors is they can construct quadzillions of these things. It turns out to be easy to construct subfactors. So there's two different approaches to this. The standard approach, there's a notion of size. So it's a relative size of this factor inside another factor. It's the name is index. And the name comes from index of one field inside another field. So you're doing extensions of fields. The the index of C inside R is 2. And so this is just a generalization of that notion. It's weirder because these are infinite dimensional spaces, but
it's R inside of C.
R. Okay, so this is one of these adjective or whatever
decisions.
James, you have to do that. Except for what I'm saying. So the approach here is, so the first approach, the easy approach, is to look at, is to classify, actually it's easy approach, it's sort of the most obvious approach, classify subfactors of small index. And so index is something like 5 is what we're up to right now. So you should think of index as the order of a finite group. So inside subfactor theory are all the finite groups. So you can take your favorite factor and find a finite group that acts on it. Every finite group acts on your factor. And so you can look at your orbifold, the fixed points under G. And that's a subfactor. It's a perfectly fine subfactor, and its index is the order of your group. So literally, what these people have managed to do is inside this classification, it's classification of all finite groups of order less than or equal to 5.
Wait, so are you talking about type 3 1?
Yeah, these are type 3 1s. So the picture is type 3 1 is like QFT. Type 2 1 would be like statistical mechanics. So this is the quantum version. Right, so from that point of view, it's not such an impressive feat. At least if you're interested in finite groups, they're not going to find really exotic finite groups in this list. But they're going to find some weird subfactors. It takes a lot of work to do this. And so it turns out that the first really interesting, the word they use is exotic. The first exotic subfactor, the smallest one, this is indexed around 4.3 or so. So it's in this list. It's called the whole group. So by exotic, I mean that it doesn't have an obvious construction in terms of Lie groups or finite groups. So you have to use your bare hands. You have to invent techniques to construct this thing. If you ask a subfactor person, what would life be like without the whole group? What was life like before the whole group? And they would just shudder. It's like, what would Lie algebra theory be like if all you knew about was SLM? You'd think there wouldn't really be a theory. So the whole group was the first clue, maybe, that it's really there's some interesting stuff really going on here. So the whole group is a very special, it's the sexiest subfactor. It's the answer to the question, what is the sexiest subfactor? It's the whole group subfactor. And so the whole group O has a fusion category, it has a fusion ring, but the fusion ring is not commutative. So of course it is not going to be graded. It's not going to correspond to conformal field theory directly. But we apply the double construction, and because it's a subfactor, you can do this. We apply the double construction, and you get the modular tensor category, which means you get the SAT matrices, which means whatever, dot, dot, dot. And so Jones, this thing here, is the data that I have on one of these boards here, is the data associated to the whole group. So for Jones, this is a crucial question, because if this works, then this is telling you that this relationship between subfactors, density factors, and VOAs is working out. So this thing
could
here.
Could you spell it? I can't read your handwriting. The what group?
This guy here. This
is
not
is that an
group.
A or a U? Or
it's Danish. So it's Holger group. Is how I mispronounce it, and everyone else, pretty much, Denmark is a small population, so pretty much everyone mispronounces his name. So it's okay to mispronounce it, is what I'm saying. Right, so I forgot to mention another conjecture. Another conjecture says that if you have, so I believe that all modular tensor categories correspond to a VOA. What about this very special class of modular tensor categories that correspond to doubles? Well, the conjecture, I think this, if you believe that conjecture, then you believe this conjecture. It says that the doubles of fusions, of fusion categories, for example, the double of the whole group, will be, if and only if, it comes from, it's the modular tensor category of a VOA of a special kind, namely a conformal subalgebra. So it's the modular tensor category of a conformal subalgebra of a holomorphic theory. So that's what you're expecting to be true. So these are very special. But there's much more that's special about these that are missed right now by VOA theory. I'm quite sure that these VOAs are doubles of some VOA-like thing that corresponds to the fusion category more directly. Its representation category would be the fusion category. And you can get hints as to how this looks. But I'm kind of getting into this. I think I'm getting over my time.
So you think there's a categorical construction?
Yeah, well, categories is the wrong word to use. So there's some kind of a generalization of VOA where you lose the braiding, and that'll be much easier to construct. Because the way you'll construct the whole group VOA ultimately is to construct this pre-VOA, and then do its double, and then do its double, and then you get your whole group VOA.
What properties would these pre-VOAs don't have?
Well, it'll have to have its category will be semi-simple, category of reps, modules. It'll have a product structure on it. Its category of reps will be a fusion category, so it'll have contributing.
But somehow it's not commutative? Or?
So one example of this would be, I don't know the answer to your question. It won't be a general commutative, that's right. But one example of this, so let's call it the square root. So in this picture here, what does the... So an example of what? So an example of a double of a fusion category would be the double of the fusion category associated to the finite group subfactor. And these things of course correspond to orbifold theories, V, G, in this world. And so you have, so this thing would correspond to the fusion category that's the representation of the finite group. So somehow you'd see something that looks like representation of a finite group when you apply that construction to this very special class of fusion categories. So I know some things about this thing, the way it would kind of look, but I don't know much about it. I haven't thought much about it. Okay, so this is where this problem comes from. The problem I wrote down on the board, it's the whole group. So it'll be the first exotic VOA, if you want, or terminology from fusion categories. So that's why it's important. Its importance is a clue that all these conjectures are holding up. Okay, I'm definitely running out of time.
So you wrote down the two series with the TNF. Did you mean the TNF
matrix? Yeah, so there's some, I have some machinery that starts with the representation of SL2Z and it cranks out the modular cat of the modular forms that we realize, all the modular forms. Right, so this is one approach, but you can see that it doesn't go that far, but even so, it's still finding some exotic stuff. Another approach is to look at families of subfactors or fusion categories, things that have a certain form to them. And so this would be my contribution to the subfactor world. And so you can look at what the whole group of fusion ring looks like. And you just generalize it in an obvious way. And you can then say, can we find other subfactors, other families of endomorphisms that realize these things? And so you can do this, and that's where all hell breaks loose. So I don't have time to get into all the details, but so if you do, so the second approach, this is where I'll end, saying a little bit about the second approach, is to look at families. Look at all the subfactors with a certain structure. So what you're doing is you have this vast world of fusion categories out there. And what you're doing is you're picking up your binoculars and you're just choosing a more or less random direction and looking in that more or less right direction. You're not choosing a random direction, you're choosing a direction where you can actually, it's an easy direction. It's a direction where these are heavy binoculars, so you just want it to be horizontal, you don't want it to be anything too lofty. So you look at very, relatively simple fusion categories. They'll have arbitrarily large number of simple objects. It's not, and the index will go off to infinity, but nevertheless, it's a well-behaved, so the fusion ring is of a certain form. And you can classify these things. You can write down what the constraints are on this family. You can solve these equations. And what you get is, to make a long story short, what you see is the whole group lies in an infinite family. But you can say much more than that. That's relatively boring. What you can say, which is far more exciting, I think, is that everything that you see, in the family that you break down, this natural family here, it'll have the Yang-Li non-unitary models in that family. The G2 level 1 is in this family. I think is in this family. You got a few things that are in this family that are familiar, but about three or four of them. And everything else is new. So this is a random direction, random nice direction, and almost everything is exotic. So my feeling is, if you want to call it conjecture, is there's nothing special with this direction. The same would happen. So we've looked in other directions as well with the same result. You'll get some familiar stuff, but almost everything will be exotic. Almost everything will be new. New from the subfactor point of view, new from the fusion category, new from modular tensor category point of view, and conjecturally new from the VOA point of view. And so my feeling is we know 0% of the rational VOAs out there. We're in the world of Lie algebras. All you knew about is the classical matrix algebras. We're in the world of subfactors before they knew about the Hilbert. That's the world that we're in for VOAs. And so that's the reason for me thinking I'm not saying there aren't exotic VOAs, like the Moonshine module and stuff like that. So I'm speaking inappropriately as usual. But my feeling is that there's a world out there that we've just scratched the surface of the world of VOAs, rational VOAs, CFTs. So that's what I was.